You talked about migration of the TCP protocols over time to handle faster speeds. We're looking at a migration effort now at the IP level to handle address space exhaustion, to look at routing table explosion, to support things like policy routing. Where do you see that going? What are the requirements we should be looking at for routing protocols?
Well, you know, it's an interesting environment. I think my personal opinion is that, well, we have a saying in NASA called failure to achieve orbit, right? And you launched a rocket, but it didn't quite have enough delta V to make orbit. And I think a lot of the proposals out there are going to end up not really making orbit. They're not going to have a lot of implementation. And I think part of the issue there is you have to look at not just architecture, but a transition plan of how you get from where you are now to where you want to be. And we have to learn something from the ISO experience. People are not going to convert to some new protocol unless there's a significant functional advantage to doing so. Okay?
Well, that's interesting because many of the ISO protocols had were feature-rich, one might say. X400 was touted that way, many of the lower layers.
Right.
But I can run
I can run X400 and X500 on top of IP.
Okay.
So, I mean, that does, just because I want the ISO application, regardless of whether or not the application is good or bad, if it's a good application, inside NASA, there's a major effort to put in place name service using the X500 protocols that are running on top of an IP internet. So I don't need the ISO lower layers to get ISO applications.
Are there advantages at the lower layers that ISO had? For example, ESIS as a discovery program.
I think there's a lot of advantages in piecework, but the question is, you know, you've got a large installed TCP/IP base. It is not adequate just to have slight advantages to get people to convert. Okay, how many vendors? Here's an interesting question: how many vendors ship ISO software as their default network software that their operating systems use? Okay, for things like file service, remote logon, remote procedure call mechanisms, ship it by default in their workstation. It's not an extra cost option. I'm talking about something that's bundled in because it's so key to the software on the distributed computing environment that it has to be there. How many vendors do that?
Well, it's a good thing we can't name vendors on this program.
Right. So it's there's the question there. And I think the question with an IPv7 follow-on is what advantages does it give you on top of the existing IP? If the only advantage it gives you is that the system is scalable, better scalable, that's an advantage, which is a global advantage, but has very little effect on a local decision, right? Some university is not going to go off and implement all the host software or buy brand new host software and network diagnostic tools and routers and all that sort of stuff just so that the internet can grow, right? There's no advantage to them to do that. So from a point of view of an incentive, what incentives do you provide people to change?
Okay. What would you like to see in a new routing protocol? What are some of the things missing in IP that you'd like to see there?
Well, you mean in an internet protocol?
Yeah.
I think the point, well, there's obviously some issues with scaling. I think that would be useful. But I think better, we're now getting with ATM and other type of that type of an environment, communication subnets which have ability to do resource control and some better performance assuring capabilities. And you'd like to have the IP protocol have some capability for doing flow IDs or something like that would allow the routers to get some information that they could use to either signal down to the subnet in terms of this flow needs such and such capability, and now the ATM network can provide that. The TCP layer knows that it needs that. How you get that information?
So that's coordinating. For example, if we have isochronous data running across multiple ATM clouds in a complex internet, a flow ID would let us identify that flow of data through the network.
Yeah, it's an oversimplification, but yeah, right. Basically, what we'd like. you know, if think about how much better it would be if you had an M-bone, a multicast backbone, where you could actually devote bandwidth on demand. When somebody's running a video conference, that they can get that bandwidth, and not be stomped on by two crays trying to do a file transfer with each other. With an ATM substrate, you can actually do that kind of thing. But yet, it's very difficult when you actually try and use that in an environment where you've got TCP and IP and routers and the whole nine yards to make that work. So I think there would be some advantages there. I think another area would be something that would help you better provide security and securing access to hosts. Though this is primarily a problem with complex operating systems we have, there's potential at least for certain things that could be done there. I think that's, unless something is done about being able to secure communications, not just by things like encryption, but make sure that people can't do bad things to you across the network and that your network's not subject to denial of service attacks, etc. The internet's not going to become a global village public data network. Businesses are not going to pick a common carrier-based IP solution as opposed to a frame relay or an ATM or SMDS type of solution because of the potential issues. You got to take your average workstation. You look at how many lines of code there are in there for the various services that are available over the network. That's a very complex beast, and it really, a lot of this was not designed with security in mind. And now, if you've got corporate data that's your livelihood, and you're attaching it to a network where anybody, you know, from the Antarctic to Kuwait can get onto the thing. I mean, this is quite an interesting thing. You know, you need to think about that.
Interesting is an understatement. There you have it. This is Geek of the Week. We've been talking to Milo Medin. Thanks a lot, Milo.
Thank you.
This has been Geek of the Week, brought to you by Sun Microsystems and by O'Reilly & Associates. To purchase an audio cassette or audio CD of this program, send electronic mail to radio@ora.com. Internet Talk Radio. The medium is the message.